The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Hello there and welcome to our weekly podcast. This is a compilation of our best interviews from the last 5 days, all in one place. And so this week, after the Dancing with the Stars semi-final became the grand finale, Lottie Ryan spoke to me about being crowned Queen of the Dance Floor. Young Offenders star Jennifer Barry talked to me about the tough lessons that need to be learned as we tackle the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Melanie Murphy told me how the cancellation of her wedding day celebrations helped her focus on the things that really matter. And best-selling author Harlan Coben talked to me about his latest thriller, The Boy from the Woods, and what draws him to suburban life and its dark secrets. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, yes. Dancing with the Stars on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Muller Corner. Mullerlicious.
Lottie Ryan, good morning.
Morning.
I could not be happier for a human being on this island today than I am for you.
Thank you so much. I'm in a little bit of disbelief, if I'm being honest. It's been a whirlwind 24 hours.
What made it all the sweeter was that you had been battling in the dance-offs and so forth, and yet you still overcame and won the whole kit and caboodle. How, when they announced your name, I saw that lovely face. There was a sincere shock on your face last night. What did you think when they said Lottie and Pasquale?
Well, I genuinely couldn't believe it. I think the four of us who were left yesterday, the standards that was being brought was really, really high. So I genuinely felt anyone could have taken it last night. And I think everybody was under a particularly high amount of pressure because we, in such a short space of time, had to turn a semi-final into a final. And it was, you know, everybody was under a lot of pressure. And I just think I almost wasn't even thinking about the glitter ball. We were just thinking about getting through the show and trying to make it the best that we could.
What time did they tell you that it was going to be the final when it should have been just the semi?
Like, it was late enough. I think it was must have been nearly 1 o'clock.
Yeah. Gosh, what a shock. An amazing turnaround to you and the crew, everyone to pull that together and to play us all in our bunkers with a dazzling, glittering finale in such short notice was impressive. So well done. But to win it even, how's your mum?
My family lost their mind.
Yeah, I'm so happy. They were there. They're such loyal supporters to you, and they were there the whole time. And they all must be just so beside themselves.
They're over the moon. Oh, and I'm happy for them as well, because since the whole thing began, which is like quite a while ago at this stage, I mean, we're talking back in Christmas, I think they saw a change in me from the beginning. So they saw how happy I was and how much it meant to me and how much I was enjoying it. And they backed me and supported me from the beginning of the whole thing. They were out in the studio all the time when the live shows were on. They were very understanding of me never answering my phone or getting back to messages or never turning up for Sunday lunch. And they just were incredible. So I'm so grateful to them for being so amazing.
And you know who was watching it on the greatest 48 screen inch in the sky with a little whiskey looking down, having turned off 2001 A Space Odyssey to take the time to watch his beautiful daughter do him so proud. You know, I couldn't stop thinking of your dad last night. I mean, he would have been just, and I can say this from my heart, he would have been the happiest dad in Ireland last night.
Oh, thank you. I hope he would have. I really do. I think, I don't know what his reaction would have been. I think he would have, he would have lost his mind, wouldn't he? He would have been going absolutely bonkers. And I like to think maybe he had a little bit of a hand in everything that went on yesterday, keeping my nerves under control and helping us get through the day. I think you would have been really happy, yeah.
You did yourself and you did your family and an extended family, such pride last night, and I'm just so happy for you, Lottie. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Ryan.
Enjoy
thank
your day.
You so much.
Bask in joy and sashay around the place with your head held high, but at a socially distant manner.
Yeah, of course.
See you, Lottie.
Thanks, Ryan.
You're brilliant.
Bye.
Okay, mind yourself. 9:32, it's Monday morning, and I want to say hello to Jennifer Barry, who you know as Siobhan from The Young Offenders, among other things. Jennifer, nice to talk to you again. How are you today?
Hello, how are things?
I'm good. What part of the world are you in as we speak?
I am currently in the dental hospital in Cork, in CUH. There's people volunteering today to come in to help out with the emergency patients and stuff. So I'm on reception with my friends, Aileen and Ellen, and my mom is in the office inside there, so... And they're turning the surgery into a kind of emergency area as well for the outpatients from the normal hospital.
And you're just there because you have the time?
Yeah, I have the time.
Yeah, no, that's tremendous. And that's the right thing to do. But that's not why we're talking, am I right?
I don't think so, no.
Well, here's the thing. Can I ask what age you are, Jennifer? Just remind me.
I'm 19 now.
19, okay. And my oldest one is older than that, but I'm down through the years, any of them of your type of generation I meet, upbeat, happy, full of divilment, like yourself. And when you hear at 19 or 20 and you're in college or whatever that the schools and institutions have been closed down for X amount of weeks, the first thing you think is party time, just because you just... Well, why don't you tell me what happened on Thursday night?
Yeah, so my parents are going to kill me now. There was actually a house party on in Cork City. Now, because I'm not in college, you know, I don't get that many opportunities to go out with my friends. And hearing that they were finished college and stuff, it was a huge celebration for me because it meant that they'd be around more, I'd be able to see them more, you know, all that stuff. So my parents warned me before I went out. They said, you're making a mistake here and this is not something you should be doing during, you know, these kind of times. With the coronavirus, and I just said, look, like, no one's going to have it up there. Like, we're all young. Like, we're not going to give it to each other or anything. Like, that's just not going to happen. And I stupidly ignored their advice.
And what I'm not going to do for the next few minutes, I'm not going to judge you, and I'm not going to, you know, I just want to hear your story. Had you heard the news or watched the news? You know, were you up to speed or were you kind of ignoring it a bit?
I suppose you know, when something like this happens, you try to ignore it because you just don't want it to seem real.
Yeah, fair point.
At the same time, then I thought, you know, there were so few cases on Thursday, and now that just jumped crazily. But at the time, there wasn't that many cases, and I didn't think that anyone I would know would have it. So I just, I more or less ignored it.
Okay, and obviously the domino effect I was talking about earlier on, if you got it, good for you because you'll survive it. But is there anyone in your house, for example, that might be a little bit more threatened by it than you as a healthy young woman?
My entire family.
Tell me.
Okay, so I suppose that when I came home from that party the next day, my dad was just not furious, but just so frightened. And he just couldn't believe that I went out. And it was only then when I sat down with my parents and they said, like, your mom's on medication for her heart, your brother has Down syndrome and your sister has asthma, and I'm old. Like, my dad is older than most dads for people my age. So it was only then when they said that to me that I was so, so shocked and so furious at myself. My stupidity has and still is now, because it takes 14 days for the symptoms to come through, and you know, if I have it, it's already been passed on to them now. So yeah, every day now is kind of a small bit of, I'm living in fear a small bit for my family now because of something I stupidly did.
Yeah, I just think you and so many others did that on Thursday night. You just thought, like, party time, you know.
It's just such, you know, we should be allowed to have fun, but I think now people need to realise that, would you rather be bored or would you rather someone you love die?
Now you have it.
That's the way you have to look at it now. And, you know, if you want to be the person to go out and have the crack and go to these house parties, instead of being the one to take a step back and look after the ones you love, well, you know, that says it all, really.
The sense of the new normal means that you're doing what you're doing today. You've learned your mistake.
Yeah, hugely.
Clearly. And obviously we all, as I say, it's not a judgment call. It's just simply you did like what so many other people did. There was this footage that came out of Temple Bar in Dublin over the weekend of, you know, rammed pubs and just jammed. And people were just so upset. I don't think they were angry. I think they were upset.
You're ignoring such, not strict, but just such important rules. And
it's life and death.
Yeah, it is, and it's up to us to prevent it. Like,
yeah.
And I think, you know, people just need to understand that. And I think that now, since the closure of the pubs, I think it will make a huge difference. But even then, there'll be people in the States, you know, going out to house parties with people having like nightly sessions with their neighbours. You know, it's all great crack. But like, if you pass it on to someone who doesn't have a great immune system or is older, you know, you're taking their life away from them. Right, basically, it's selfish.
But you're being selfless this morning as you volunteer now. Your conscience is getting better and better with every morning that passes by.
Getting my heaven points up, yeah.
You're getting your heaven. you're getting closer to the front of the bus to heaven now by helping out there. So keep doing that. It's a lovely thing to do, a bit of voluntary work, as long as you're keeping that social distance clearly and looking after things. Look, you know, it's not an easy thing to come on and admit that you made a mistake like that. But I think what you've done for us this morning is you've helped deliver the message to a lot of people your age, a lot of people like me who own people your age and who love people like you, like our daughters. And we just want, and our mothers and fathers and family and friends, we just want to mind a little bit more. So, Jennifer, thank you for doing us that favour this morning.
Oh, thank you for listening to me.
No, I've met you a couple of times. You're a great crack. You're actually a very good person, so there's no issue there, but it was just one of those things. We're all trying to come to terms with what we're dealing with, and that's you've helped us enormously by telling us your story. So thank you, Jennifer. Mind yourself and the family, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks a million, Ryan.
All right. Look after yourself. I also want to talk to people like Melanie. Good morning, Melanie Murphy.
Good morning. How are you?
How the devil are you, Melanie?
Oh, grand. Not sick, thankfully.
That's good news. Where are you in the world?
I am hiding myself away up in my partner's parents' house because it's in the middle of nowhere.
Well, I won't ask you where that is now, just in case we upset anyone. But your partner and you have a story to tell. Talk to me.
We do. So our wedding was due to happen on Saturday. And then when all of the guidelines came out about getting the guests under 100, we were like, right, we'll just stick to that. We'll get it down. Got it down to about 8 yards because a lot of people were dropping out, obviously, for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then they announced, you know, they weren't banning weddings, but they were essentially asking people not to have them. And we just couldn't go ahead with it, you know. And of course, I had a cry and a bit of a scream and a bit of a strop, but I had to just cop myself on.
Where were you going to get married?
In Ballybeg in Wicklow. So the whole thing was planned down to like the...
Did you have the Guna?
Oh, we everything down to the sparklers. Like,
okay.
Like handmade little table names. Everything was done. And it was kind of at that point where people were going to start arriving from abroad to come and celebrate with us, like friends and family and stuff. And, you know, it's just such an unimaginable thing because you can't even plan on how you would react to that situation. But we had arranged to do the signing, like the legal bit, in a registry office on the Monday.
Yeah.
And because like we had the big day on Saturday, we were initially going to go in. I was going to literally wear like tracksuit or something and just sign it and then feck off and go and have the big day on the weekend.
Yeah.
But because that obviously couldn't go ahead, we said, right, we'll just try and make the registry office bit special and we'll just kick it down the road and do it at some future time. Because obviously, like, we've lost a bit of money and things like that, and we just want to focus on other things in our lives.
Wait a second. Have you lost the love?
Not
no, this is the most important. Don't worry about the money for the moment, even though it's a pain in the face. But you've still got your man.
That's it.
You went to the registry office and said, let's make this the thing.
Yeah, and it was lovely. Like, I feel like we didn't expect it to actually be so lovely. We were just crying and kind of, it just made us realise, like, the marriage is much more important than the wedding.
Well,
and the wedding
said.
Is, like, it's a privilege to be able to have a wedding for a lot of people anyway. So I just, you know, a lot of people are going through so much worse with this virus, but we just focused on the good. And I think that glass half full attitude is what a lot of us need to get through this.
For sure. So how was the event then? You were in the registry office on Tuesday.
On Tuesday, yeah, so the mother-in-law went and got me a little bouquet down the shop. He just threw it together real quick. And then the sister-in-law, like, she wrote, just married with lipstick on the back of their normal car. So we just tried to, dab it up a little bit. My brother did a reading and it was lovely. Like, we added in a bit of music and we dressed up a bit.
What music?
It's from Braveheart. It's called A Gift of Thistle and it's really cute. It's like a minute long because obviously the registry office is tiny and you're just...
Oh, this was for the aisle?
Yeah.
For your dad walking you down the aisle to Braveheart?
Yeah, and it was just so nice. That's the thing, like, I didn't want to, like, put it off for a really long time. I was like, I want to marry this person and at the end of the day, that's all that matters, is that we're married and we're committing to each other and we got to say our vows and do the rings and that's the bit I was most excited about on the day anyway.
This whole situation has made us realise how important the small but profound things are compared to the big showy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's it. Like a wedding, it's like you've got the dress and it's all the flashy and you've got the photographer and the video person and all that stuff and it doesn't, like, they don't mean anything. You know, obviously it's nice to have, but this has actually really kind of, it just stripping it back and stuff has just made me be so grateful for the person that I have in my life more than anything.
It's a beautiful, you know, Melanie, I because I work with a bunch of very, very hardworking colleagues here on the radio, I didn't realise until about a year ago that ASOS wasn't actually a sub-wing of ISIS and that it's a sort of shopping thing that these envelopes come in every so often, or bags. And not to my guys, to other teams, obviously. Mine wouldn't dream of ordering anything at work. But my point is, you had a guna, like a dress planned. So what did you do then in the event of...
So I had a lovely dress from Town Bride before it shut down. I got it in the closing down sale and he did all my fittings and stuff and it was all ready to go on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then I had this other dress as a backup in case it didn't fit on the day and then I was going to wear it on the day after the wedding. We were going to have like a trad session with all the family around. And that was my dress for that day. It was kind of just like a backup for the main day if my dress didn't fit. But I just wore that and it was lovely. It was like from ASOS. It was about 100 and something quid. And they're actually wedding dresses. Like, a lot of people wear them for their wedding. So it made me realise you can get married on a massive budget if you want to.
Or you can have a tight-knit, kind, intimate, loving family gathering with Braveheart playing in the background for the short walk up the aisle and a dress that cost a few bob that came in an envelope in the... It's the heart that matters, not the wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, what a great result.
It was absolutely lovely and I'm so chuffed we decided to make that bigger deal of that day because obviously this is a day-by-day thing and we don't know how things are changing. But I just, you're not going to want to be responsible for anyone falling ill just to come. And obviously everyone gets so excited about the wedding and everyone plans for it for months and months. But it's not worth the stress of that, of thinking someone might fall ill and I feel so bad for a lot of people who've been thrown into this situation. But at the end of the day, how you react, like, that makes all the difference. And just concentrate on the relationship.
Exactly. How did you meet him?
So we've been friends for over a decade. Like, I knew him since we were teenagers. And my dad always had a suspicion we'd end up together, like, when the time was right kind of thing. We've been together nearly 3 years now. So it's just... It just couldn't have gone better, and we've just been smiling ever since. We're man and wife.
Imagine, I mean, you've swapped the aisle of the registry office for the aisle of Super Value. two happy people going down whatever aisle might take you, but the love conquers all, and in your case, it truly has. I love this story, and I think it could be the way of the future.
Oh, I hope so, and I just hope that you know, people can kind of come together in this rather than kind of, because I've noticed that people, communities have been coming together and really helping each other and just kind of getting back to the old ways, and it's lovely in that way. So I think like focusing on those things is so important with just the horrors in the news right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's just in our lives when it's all gone a bit crazy, you need to have that sense of love and Scotland.
Oh, you're gonna make me cry.
Hold, as a nation, we have to keep saying it. We have to hold. Because once in a while, people like you, Melanie, meet people like Thomas and find yourselves looking at the shelves in Super Value and thinking, who needs a castle? Who needs a kilt? Who needs a honeymoon to the Seychelles? I have you, you have me, and forever, love conquers all.
Are
you happy now, Melanie?
I'm very happy.
You can only do a Scottish accent as Shrek anyway, you know that.
No.
Donkey, what's the matter with you?
Donkey.
Let's watch Shrek later. Yes.
Yeah, all right. That'll be the honeymoon movie.
Ah, listen, why not? Congratulations to you.
Thank you so much.
We wish you every happiness.
Thank you very
Stay in
much.
Touch. Mind yourself, Manny. Well done.
You too. I'm just chuffed. And I hope you all stay well. Everyone, wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Keep a little distance.
Yes. And be happy and be kind.
Focus on the people in your lives.
You got that right. See you, Melanie. Mind yourself.
Thank you.
Author Harlan Coben is the master of the plot twist thriller with such bestsellers as Tell No One and The Stranger. His latest mystery, The Boy from the Woods, it's terrific. And it's just what we need to get stuck into while self-isolating in these times of uncertainty, which is exactly what I've been reading in the last few days and loving it. A page-turner par excellence. And Harlan this week joins us on the show. Good morning to you, Harlan. Very nice to talk to you.
Nice talking to you. Thanks for the kind words. That's a nice way to start.
Harlan, as a writer, you're at home at the moment, not necessarily locked down, but you look out the window this morning and look at the world, which is so changed from this day last week or 2 weeks ago. What are you thinking?
I think the uncertainty is the hard part for everybody, really. For me, staying inside, socially distancing, not to be make light, there's a fine line between social distancing and being a writer. I'm often my best when I'm stuck alone, having to make myself work and keep away from other people. I hope everybody's listening. And I hope everybody's taking it extraordinarily seriously. And I'm hoping that what I do, The Boy from the Woods, will be a distraction, as you said, a diversion, entertainment, something to. This is what I contribute. I can't build things. My wife is a doctor; she can help that way. This is my contribution, if you will.
Well, indeed, you're both in very different ways offering a salve to a jaded public. On to your own schedule at the moment. I mean, this has upended everybody's world. You would have been on a book tour, obviously, going to various bookshops, and our friends in the bookshops listening in today will be suffering, as you can appreciate. So what has it done to you in the tour for The Boy from the Woods?
Well, the tour is over for The Boy from the Woods. It's hard for me to care about that sort of thing. But I do worry a lot about the stores. I was going to visit them on my Twitter page. I'm highlighting each day the store that I was going to visit, something about them, ways that you can still order with them. I'm signing a lot of book plates for them and other stores to send out with the book. So to encourage, still to shop locally, if the store is open and safe and practicing social distancing, you can do that. A lot of stores are being clever, shops delivering or leaving it right outside the door in some way.
Yes.
So we're all trying to, we're all trying to make do. I think ebooks right now are going to be very, very big for people. Trying to make it work as well as possible.
And if people are reading more, whether it's your books or anything, the bottom line is this can only be nourishment for a generation's brains and souls.
That's what I hope. We try to make the good out of it. I'm also recommending on my Twitter feed all sorts of other people's books that I think that people might like while they're shut in to give a try too. But yes, you try. It's hard to try to make a positive out of a negative, but how often do you say, I wish I had some downtime. I wish I just had some quiet time to read. And I also said, I was sort of doing a little thing online the other day where I was saying, how many of you told me over the years, I wish I could write a book, but I don't have time. This is your chance.
Yes.
Take a pen and paper, start. Why not? Yeah. It might not be any good. Somebody said to me, well, it probably won't be any good. I'm like, I play golf all the time. I'm no good at it, but I still like it.
Yeah. It's one of those bizarre sliding doors moments. I mean, even in your book, you talk about the Hitler paradox. Like, what if Hitler hadn't been born? This could be the Corvid paradox. If we didn't have it, there might be some Nobel Prize literature winner waiting to go who suddenly goes, actually, I have that time now. Who knows?
Right. So let's hope people, you know, the key is that people have to take this really seriously. I mean, again, having a wife in the medical profession,
sure.
This is not, you know, this is not fun and games. We don't know where this is going to go. Really, no one seems to know. So I do hope people take it seriously. And I do hope that my part of it is that you read The Boy from the Woods or you watch The Stranger on Netflix or something like that. That's what I do. And if it helps you, it means that, you know, that means a great deal to me. I love hearing from people that are telling me when they say that.
Yes,
it means a lot to me.
Well, that's why I really meant it when I said at the beginning of our chat, Harlan, that The Boy from the Woods in the last week was a page turning joy to go to return to. You know, when a book is so
Thank
enjoyable,
you
know that, but you want to go back to it. You want to wake up early.
When you tell me that. That's what I try to do. That's the best feeling. That's the best thing you can say to me. I mean, I always joke that I want The Boy from the Woods to be the book you take to bed 11 o'clock at night and say, I'm just going to read for 10 minutes. The next thing you know, it's 4 in the morning.
Now you have it. I love
same
that.
Thing now.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, you're bored, you're distracted, the day is going to go too long, all of a sudden you start the book at 10 a.m., boom, it's 6 p.m. That's my hope.
But will you give us the... Indeed. Would you give us the nutshell description of the book for those who haven't picked it up? Because it's only out now.
Sure. Well, also I'll give you the what if quickly. So,
sure.
I was hiking through the woods, which I hate. You know, I'm looking for a coffee shop. I'm looking for window shopping. I'm looking for a bookstore. You know, this, after a while, when you hike, it's trees. I got it. Trees. Can we move on? And so my mind starts to wander, and I see a little boy, probably around 6 years old, and walking through the woods. And I think to myself, what if that boy just came out of the woods now, and no one knew where he came from? He swears he always lived there. He broke into houses to survive or whatever else. He remembers no parents. And what if 30 years pass? He's an adult now, and he still has no idea who his parents are, what his background is, nothing. And then another child goes missing in those woods, and he has to find them. That was the seed, the start for me of The Boy from the Woods.
Yeah. And that brings us to Wilde, of course, as he's called in the book. And he's a kind of enigmatic but important figure in the story, which involves teenagers and grandparents and romance, but also, obviously, plot twists and turns all the way along. So tell us a little bit about that, too.
Yes, well, you know, there's co-leads. So Wilde is one lead. The other one, which I thought would be funny, was a 7-year-old, tough-talking female lawyer from New York City, Hester Krimstein, who I've featured in other books, but now we get to meet her. And she and Wilde share a tragic past. And is when another kid goes missing and they start realizing the ramifications for this is not just some kids running away or even being kidnapped, but actually could help change the entire world. The story starts to really spin. This is for those who watch The Stranger on Netflix or whatever, know my work. This is pretty twisty with, I think, one of my better surprise endings. There's three surprises at the end. And
say nothing.
I hope you hang on. Once the book gets started, I hope you just hang on.
That's it, exactly. And I will talk about The Stranger in a minute. But there's just three pieces, I think, in the book that I'd love to talk to you about. One is Hester, as you mentioned her. She's the 70-year-old perky lawyer who's no nonsense and doesn't suffer fools, as we say. What I loved about what you did with her story that a lot of our listeners will, I hope, resonate with is that she's the romantic lead. She's falling in, not in love with, but she certainly has this teenage relationship with a man her own age that is just the sweetest thing for a hard-nosed woman. But in other words, romance carries down through the, you know, as I always say, adults are just kids with wrinkles anyway.
Yeah, thank you. That's exactly what I was trying to do. I haven't seen a romance or written too many in crime fiction where romance with two 70-year-olds And, you know, one of my sort of philosophies on life is that we are all 17 waiting for our life to begin. We are always 17 waiting for our life to begin. And so the heart doesn't know from age. The heart doesn't know from any of that. And so to watch her heart kind of go vroom again and to watch her swoon, this sort of tough-talking lawyer, I think was really fun to write, and I'm loving the reaction. So thank you.
No, it's really sweet.
This book has a lot in it. I tried putting a lot in this book.
I get that. I get that.
I wanted crime. I wanted romance. I wanted thriller. I wanted danger. And also I wanted contemporary issues. I wanted it all. Sorry.
Well, you got it all, because you then have one of your characters, obviously Rusty Eggers, a reality TV star turned conscienceless presidential frontrunner, based loosely on no one we know, I'm sure, but nevertheless, very much echoing our times.
Yes. Basically, I was more the cult of personality, frankly, than right-wing or left-wing or any of that. It's the extremism on both sides, perhaps, and the sort of cult of personality, but there's something called the horseshoe theory of politics, which is that when you start going too far right and start going too far left, they become much more like each other than they are like the center. And there's a danger there. So, you know, it's not, I don't write political books, but it's what's going on. I write contemporary novels. So whatever's going on in society, how we're being manipulated, how we're getting fake news, whatever side you're on.
Yeah.
We are being toyed with. And I hope we're not being toyed with too much right now. And so, in a fun way, I hope, I try to explore that.
I got the sense that you, as a writer, might be jaded by CNN and Fox News.
Well, I'm more jaded by one than the other, let's put it that way.
That's what I'm saying. You're equal opportunity jaded.
We have to be very, very careful of being manipulated by false stories. And there's a chapter in there, I don't know how far you've gotten, I'm not giving anything away, where a political team is doing damage control,
yes,
and you can really see what actually goes on. I know this for a fact. What actually goes on when something bad is happening to your candidate, and what nonsense you will put out, and how it works, and it works very effectively.
Yeah. We're going since the Romans, I think. But let me ask you about one of the third of the three things that really jumped out at me was how well you write teenagers as a father. Well, one's beyond that, but anyway. But two, the language of them. I think sometimes grown ups, that is to say, people like you and me, but certainly writers, which is you, often sound like they're trying to get teenagers right. But you obviously have very good cold face experience of it, because it feels very real.
I have four children that are now between the ages of 18 and 25, and they did read it. They do read it early, and if I get something glaringly wrong about the teens, they let me know. They let me know. But a lot of it is a lot of my job basically is eavesdropping. So in days when I would be able to carpool and just sit there quietly and try to listen. And if I am sitting next to you in a coffee shop sometime and you're wondering, is he listening into my conversation? The answer is usually yes. Fringe benefit of my job. It's nothing personal.
I forget the word now, which is annoying me, but at one stage, I think it's Wilde is talking to the teenager Matthew, and Matthew says something very teenagey that I hear probably twice, three times a week, which is, never use that word again. That's for us, essentially, not for you.
Exactly. I get that from my kids. If anybody follows me on Instagram, sometimes or Twitter, I'll say something cool, like I think it's cool.
Yes.
And my daughter, one of my kids, will comment just the word ew.
You will never be
or
cool.
Stop. Or stop.
Stop.
Or
stop.
Just eye roll.
Yeah. I get it.
Or my personal favorite is, can you not?
Can you not do that in front of my friend and park somewhere, park three roads down? We don't want to see you in public. But Harlan, let me ask you briefly, if I may, about The Stranger on Netflix, because I was watching, I got a kind of word of mouth recommendation. I watched one episode and then I thought, hang on, I'm actually going to be late for work tomorrow morning if I keep going here. So, you know, what are you heartened by what's happening there? You're kind of conflating your literary endeavors with the television world now. I mean, where's that sitting with you?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I'm trying to deal with Netflix as the first of the deal, though. I have two other shows one other show on Netflix right now in the UK called Faith. And for the UK shows, I've teamed up with really the best, Red Productions and Nicola Schindler and Danny Brocklehurst. Nicola and Red Productions with Happy Valley and Last Tango in Halifax, Queer as Folk, and Years, and Scott and Bailey. I can go on and on. Mm. And so Nicola is my partner on these, and The Stranger seems to have done really well in the UK. I'm thrilled with how it's gone. And people are now watching Safe. And if you have Sky and Demand, you can watch The Five. Those are the three shows that we've done. Danny Brocklehurst has been my head writer, my partner, also writing partner on all of these shows. And we're having a blast with them. And we're looking forward to making another one.
And of course, as an Irishman, Harlan Coben, you appreciate that we're very happy to see Walking on Cars getting having a presence on the program.
I love that song. Walking on Cars. We also have Stephen Ray, of course.
Yes, and another great actor. Yeah, sure.
So we had two of your legends, two of my favorite Irish actors.
Great.
On the show last time, Emmett Scanlon is another one of my favorite. A lot of talent, obviously, and it's fun working with those people. Stephen and Durbo were both just great on set. And I can't get that Walking on Cars song out of my head. Can you?
No. Start hearing that.
It plays in the beginning. I've been calling people the monster all the time. These monsters back and down.
For sure. One of the things that I was kind of not happy to hear about you, but that kind of jumped out at me was that you've never read Wuthering Heights. And I think I got through the first two paragraphs of it because I just found it so, I don't know what it was. It just wasn't for me, but yet I feel ignorant as a result of this admission.
Well, you know something? They always ask the question about what classics haven't you read? And I'm like, I start going through the list. It's a lot. Don't worry, there's nothing. It's nothing. And how many people have told you they've read a book and haven't? Ask anybody.
It's a good old movie. Yeah. And speaking of which, I know you love a book that I only knew the movie, and then I read the book because I was lucky enough to be in New York recently, and I thought it would chime nicely with being there, which is Marathon Man.
Yes, the great William Goldman, who wrote so many great books and great screenplays over the year. Everything from, he did the screenplay for Butch Cassidy and His Sundance Kid and The President's Men. He wrote Marathon Man and Magic, and of course The Princess Bride. All that's William Goldman.
Yes.
People don't know who William Goldman is. They should. Bill passed away in his 80s, I think last year, maybe a year and a half ago, and a wonderful writer in a lot of ways. Another fun book, by the way, if you're just sitting at home, is Which Lie Did I Tell by William Goldman, which tells about the movies he made and all the lies and nonsense that go on making a movie. It's hilarious.
Yes.
William Goldman. Which Lies Did I Tell?
Great.
And look up William Goldman General. You'll be richer for it.
Oh, great. And I think he did another one about the business, all of which was summed up by his line that a dear old friend of ours in this country who passed away not too long ago, Gay Byrne, used to quote a lot, saying, nobody knows anything.
Nobody knows anything. His stories are hilarious. If there's two Which Lies Did I Tell books, Adventures in the Screen Trade is
that's
the other
one. Yeah.
But if you look at William Goldman, you will find, if you're sitting at home, Marathon Man, of course, read The Princess Bride, read Magic, this Boys and Girls Together. He has a lot of great books.
With all your millions of selling, I want to finish our conversation on a positive about your own work, Harlan Coben. It travels. Every continent, country, type of person picking up your books, they want a twist. They want fast and they want compelling and macabre. So what is it? Why are we so interested in the dark side in a way since Sherlock Holmes and before that again? What is our fascination?
I think a crime fiction, if you think of it, every novel if I ask you to name your favorite five novels that are over 100 years old, I guarantee you at least four, probably all five, will have a crime in it. Crime fiction in some way, we just call it that now. It's been around since Dostoevsky and Oscar Wilde and Alexander Dumas and Shakespeare. So I think, we love putting characters under stress. We like the ordinary man in the extraordinary circumstance to be Hitchcock. In my books, The Boy from the Woods or whatever, I try to put you in that person's position so that you have that kind of, that thrill, the roller coaster ride effect. The key is that you have to be, whatever you're reading, sometimes people forget, this is the Irish tradition, you got to tell a story.
Yeah.
You can't just tell me how brilliant you are and give me your life insight.
Yeah.
We forget sometimes in today's world, we got to tell a story, and crime fiction does that in a really, in a great way.
Yeah, we need a good story. And now, more than ever, it's the time for a nice, distracting storytelling, and that is achieved with some skill in The Boy from the Woods. Harlan Coben, it's been great talking to you. I hope we do it again sometime. And
thank you. It was really wonderful. It was a great break. And Everybody out there, I wish you nothing but the best. Please stay safe and you know, be careful.
Same to you and yours, Harlan. All the best. Good luck with everything. See you soon. Bye for now.
Take care.
Harlan Coben joining us from his home in the United States of America.